Hey everyone, welcome to Truth, Lies, Shenanigans. I go by the name Neo Nix, and I'd like to thank you all for joining us. Today is February 28th, 2021. It's the final day of Black History Month. So for today's show, we'll spotlight on Black history with United States history professor from Howard University, Daryl Michael Scott, and he'll be taking your questions as well. Also on Hot Topics, Olivia E., the host of PLS Unscripted, guest host with us today, and wants to talk about the gruesome C-section of a poor little bulldog. Rob B. talks about a mayor comparing gun owners to the Holocaust, and Lizzie Enders tells us why Hamilton might be canceled. And of course, make sure you stick around to the end for our game show, where we'll be playing a fast-paced game, 5-second guess. So make sure you share this live feed with your friends. And before we get into it, let me introduce you to my wonderful, wonderful co-host, Miss Lizzie Enders, a professor and writer, editor, and journalist out of Washington, D.C.
What's up? What's up? Happy Sunday, fun day, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. Hope you are getting vaccinated. I'm still waiting for mine, but I'm thinking I might be able to get it on Tuesday, right before my first bout of oral surgery. So there should be a lot of shots going on in addition to the insulin shot.
You are fortunate. You know, D.C. has been really good on getting those vaccines out. I have to admit, D.C. has been better than most. Well, when I say real good, it's better than most. Because I'm not even close to being on the list. So.
Well, what's happening is it's become very cumbersome for a lot of people to even sign up. So that's the issue now. One, D.C. does not have a large number of vaccines. But then when
they don't. Nobody really
when
does.
To the website to sign up, it's kind of like the same procedure when people were signing up for unemployment benefits last year. You go to the website, it crashes, you can't get through, you dial the number, the hotline, you're on the phone for hours and hours on end. So it's been difficult. It's had its challenges. I'm kind of going through the back door, but
not really a back door, it's a front door too.
But I'm not going through that procedure just yet, because I tried it on Thursday and it was just disastrous. And so, and I'm one of the people that is allowed to get a vaccine now because I have pre-existing condition. So I'm hopefully will be relying on some other resources to be able to get this taken care of and out of the way before everything blows up and like the second, third, fourth, fifth round comes and wipes us all out.
Okay. And our very own rock star with amazing rock band Fallen Machine coming to you from Sudbury, Ontario, Mr. Rob B. Rock.
What's up, what's up? Happy Sunday. It's it's a beautiful day here. The cold is going away. It's absolutely wonderful. We've had a couple of plus days. Yeah, things are melting.
It's kind of warm here too. It's in our 70s down here.
It's just but raining.
I want to wish two of my cousins a belated birthday wish. So my cousin Lenny and my cousin David. So I hope that they had a wonderful time, and I hope they celebrated safely. And thinking of you guys, I missed you at the family reunion.
And filling in for our Gianni Storm, who's taking a day off. Host, actually, Gianni Storm's online right now. He's moderating, but filling in for Gianni Storm's host of the new series, TLS Unscripted, Fridays at 7 p.m., we have Olivia E. Welcome, Olivia. Ooh, welcome back.
Thank you guys for letting me come back on your show. Happy Sunday, fun day, in Lizzie's words. I'm looking forward to all you guys' shenanigans, truth, lies, everything we're going to break down today.
Yep, you better bring it. All right, so so this is actually Olivia's second time on the show, first time as a guest host. So why don't you tell a little bit about yourself and your show Unscripted?
Okay, about myself. So Neo asked me to tell me about myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the most important thing I would say about myself is that I am a student living on this earth, and I'm constantly evolving. Like, I cannot pinpoint one thing or two things to tell you about myself, because I haven't fully achieved the things that I want to achieve. So I'm a student, I'm learning, I'm here to have a good time. I'm here to receive your good message and to hopefully put out a good message. TLS Unscripted is exactly that. We're unscripted. We're breaking down you guys' truth, lies, and unscripted after your show. So basically, you leave the classroom and you go to recess with Unscripted.
I love it.
Awesome. We're the recess class. So you come to recess for 30 minutes or to an hour, and we talk about all the things we can't talk about on Unscripted. I mean, on TLS live show. We're raw, we're organic. You know, it's hard navigating through this life. So hopefully Unscripted can turn into something where it can help all of us, you know, navigate through all the things that are happening, through faith, through whatever, and insight, and use less logic and use more our heart.
All right.
So that's Unscripted. 7 o'clock, like Neo said, TLS live show, find us.
All right. Yep, and that's going to be available. She streams live on Instagram, but we will restream it out to our other platforms as well, so you will be able to find her. All right, and for those that don't know, Olivia is also our digital graphics designer and our Instagram manager. And my sister.
So. Yeah, I'm your sister.
Yes, she is. All right. All right, hosts. So let's get started. I have a quick fire question for you guys. All right. I'm sure everyone's heard that singer Lady Gaga's dogs were recently kidnapped and the dog walker shot. Gaga offered $500,000 for the return of her dogs. No questions asked. They were then suddenly found tied to a telephone pole in the alley. The host, what is your best conspiracy theory? Let's hear from Robbie Rock.
The real conspiracy is that people are talking about the dogs and not about the dude, Ryan Fisher, that got shot walking the dogs. That's the mind-blowing for him.
Olivia E.?
Should have been me, because I would have collected that $500,000, okay?
Lizzie Henders?
Turn those dogs in so quick.
I need more receipts. Show me the receipts. I don't believe the dog walker. I don't believe the person who found the dogs. Show me the receipts.
All I can say is it wasn't me. It wasn't me. Going out like Shaggy. It wasn't me. I mean, so do we believe her? I mean, do we believe this person? Lizzie?
No, she randomly, and it wasn't like the dogs were found within the vicinity of where they were kidnapped. This random person, allegedly found the dogs miles away, tied up to some pole. And all of a sudden, oh, those look like Lady Gaga's dogs. Let me take them in and get $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That doesn't sound shady to anyone.
It sounds a little shady to me also, but I don't know, when you've got people like Danny Trejo putting the word out that they're looking for you, abandon all hope. Tie the dogs to the pole and run. Run.
See that?
Rob, I think if you are big and bad enough to shoot somebody over these dogs, then you would not hesitate to just shoot the dogs and get rid of them and not leave a paper trail. So that makes me a little suspect about this whole, this random woman all of a sudden just finds the dogs and now she's going to get $500,000.
Real quick, to Rob B's point, I want to show you the video of that moment, the dog when they were taken. This is the moment they were taken. Crazy. So it was like a white Ultima.
Like, why shoot him?
That's the thing I didn't get.
Just knock him out.
I mean, it looks like to me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It looked like to me that he was trying to fight them off, is what happened.
I don't think they were expecting that much resistance.
Just knock him out. And I don't want to say my favorite part, because there's nothing good about this story.
No, nothing.
Except, you know, the dogs being returned. But how about Miss Asia, the dog that got away?
Said, yeah, she attacked. She attacked, yep.
She ran away for cover, yes. Yes, I was all for Miss Asia.
No, but she actually attacked them and then ran off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Asia, a black French bulldog.
Yep.
Go Frenchie.
All right.
Yeah.
If you've never been to TLS before, let me tell you a little bit about it. Our hosts and guests share their truths and opinions with you, call out those lies, and point out any ridiculous shenanigans going on. And on our show, we always try to have some fun with some shenanigans of our own. Truth Lies Shenanigans streams live just about everywhere, and you can quickly find us on YouTube. Just go to tlsshow.com or search at TLS Live Show across all major social media platforms. Also, make sure you subscribe to the audio version of the podcast on iTunes or anywhere you listen to your podcast. All right, so we've gotten a little bit of the shenanigans out of the way. It's time to get some truth behind the history with our guest spotlight on Black history. Today's spotlight is on Daryl Howard of Howard University. Hello, did I say Howard? I said Daryl Howard. I'm sorry, Daryl Michael Scott. Howard, I just, you know, dyslexic. Hey, I'm, you know, I'm sure as a professor you understand. You get the...
Absolutely.
Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, let me give you a little background on Professor Scott. He specializes in modern United States history and has taught at Howard since 2003. He previously taught at the University of Florida and Columbia University, and received his doctorate from Stanford University in 1994. His book, Contempt and Pity, Social Policy and the Image of the Damaged Black Psyche, 1880 to 1996, won the Organization of American Historians 1998 James Rawley Prize. He's the editor of three books, including a lost manuscript he discovered by Carter G. Woodson, Carter G. Woodson's Appeal, which was published in 2008. He has served as director of Black Studies Program at the University of Florida and a chair of the Department of History at Howard University. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So let me start by asking you, is there anything we missed in your bio? I mean, or anything you'd like to tell our audience about you? Something we can't Google. That's what I want to know.
No, that's a good bio. And, yeah, and you can Google me too. I'm safe. In other words, so it's all
safe.
Good.
He said he's safe. Yeah, we believe that. So you've been a professor of history at Howard for how long now?
I guess it's closing in on 17 to 18 years. I've lost count.
Wow. Amazing.
And it's 2003. I guess it's 18.
So are you, your specialty is in Black history or U.S. history?
More well, combination. Since you guys have a sense of humor on this show, I've been studying Negro seriously all my life. I mean, very long time. So before, I got my PhD before I went to college and studied Negro, but in a kind of fairly serious way. But my PhD is in U.S. history, which I got in 1994. So... That's been a moment too. That's coming up on what I guess almost 30 years. Yeah, I've been doing this a while.
Yep. So Lizzie Andrews, I know you had some questions.
So how did you get started on becoming a Negro history or an African American history scholar? Like a lot of, you know, history professors, they choose what genre they want. Like you can have women's history, Black history, U.S. history, government, Jewish history. So how did you hone in? And I know Black professors who are history professors, but who don't teach African American history. So what made you hone in on the history of the brothers?
Oh, I could talk about this, but you know, this is self-absorbed stuff. So I could talk about this forever. But the short version, you know, we talk about ourselves forever. But the short version is that when I was in college, I always loved history. I didn't think I was going to be a quote-unquote historian seriously until I was an undergrad. And I was choosing among various things. And I decided that political science, they had to write quick, dirty books. English professors, I looked at what they wrote, and I didn't want to write any of that. And then history... I know. I didn't want to write any of that. And so then history, I figured out that people can't really know the past without a historian. because there's just too much back there to make sense of. And so I said, oh, they have to listen to me. And so that's how I became a historian.
I got a comment online.
By the way, in U.S. history, as opposed to African history, I got into this a little bit late after the Army, and I didn't think I could pick up enough skills to be an African historian. So there it is. If I'd had my druthers, I'd have been an African historian. Mm.
Got a comment online from Gianni Storm. She said, laugh out loud. He's so down to earth.
Already.
Yes.
They love you already, Professor. They love you already. Okay.
Harvey Rock, did you have a question? Oh, go ahead, Lizzie. You had another question?
I was going to ask, so specifically at Howard, like, what classes are you teaching now? Like, is it just straight U.S. history, or is there some type of variance?
Well, we have, see, the good thing about teaching at Howard, you're never the only Black person teaching Black history. So that's a beautiful thing. And so at Howard, I teach U.S. history. And yet, these things all intersect, because we all know you can't do American history without doing Black history. So my favorite course of nowadays is a course that I just started teaching on from slavery to mass incarceration. So it has a lot of, yeah, it has a lot of mainstream history in it, in mainstream U.S. And then, of course, this most recent thing about the 13th and all that.
Now, before I get to Robbie Rock, because that was actually my question, you've already brought it up. I watched the 13th, right? The Netflix documentary about mass incarceration, right? And it's about the 13th Amendment, where it created a loophole to perpetuate slavery. Now, noting that the United States had the highest rate of incarceration in the world, and a significant percentage of them are Black. Can you tell us more about that and what the connection is between slavery and mass incarceration? Especially for our audience who may not be aware of the...
Okay, well, let me just simply say, you know, you opened a real can of worms.
I figured.
Yeah, you did. In fact, you're about to steal the thunder for the rest of your show. But when it comes
I didn't mean to, sorry.
You did. No, you don't. No. I've been very upset about this, and I'm loaded for bear. I call these folks 13thers, which lets you know that I don't buy any of it. Okay. That there is no relationship between the 13th Amendment and mass incarceration. And I think these people are into propaganda, hoping that they're going to liberate Black people. And in the process, they're promoting bad Black history, bad American history, and everything else. But I just published an article that deals with this, but I'm also writing a book on the topic. So I'm writing a critique of this whole notion that there's such a link between the two. But at the same time, what I'm trying to do is show that there is this history of incarceration in the United States, of convict slavery, as I call it, that is nothing new with the 13th Amendment, that is a very long history, and that Black people were at once chattel slaves, mm-hmm. and when we were free, we were convict slaves, okay, mm-hmm. with a whole bunch of white folks who were slaves, if we're going to say that mm-hmm. convicts can be slaves. But anyway, so you open the can of worms, but, you know, I have to talk about that for the next 2 hours, because that's what I'm writing about right now.
All right, well, let me let Robbie get a question. And I still want to come back to it. I want to delve in a little deeper. I have more questions on it. But go ahead, Robbie, ask your question.
Yeah, so my question is more as an educator. Have you seen a change in the students who are studying Black history, just given the events of this past year? And for that, you know, I'm talking about the murder of George Floyd, a real rise in Black Lives Matters protests, removal of Civil War effigies. And I'm just wondering if you're noticing a difference in your students because they're part of this younger generation that's affecting the change.
Yeah, well, there have been many changes. I've been around long enough to see lots of changes in students. Okay? But for good and bad, right? You know, each generation writes its own history, and each generation that comes to college with a different way of looking at the world. But now how we mark a generation is usually arbitrary. But there is a difference in college students since the rise of Black Lives Matter. I think that's the critical moment that we're talking about. I don't think there's anything different since George Floyd in terms of what the students, how they come to campus, but it's been a marked change in how students think about things since Trayvon Martin. And you can start seeing a change earlier than that. I don't know if you guys remember in 2006 or 8, when the when black kids were almost thrown in jail, summarily in Louisiana, and they got in trouble. Since then, there's been more aware of, students have been more awake, if you will, what they call woke. But since Trayvon Martin, it's been a big deal. There's a big shift.
I would say, Professor, because this is just my second year at Howard, and I would say even within like the last year and a half, I've noticed kind of a shift in students where they're becoming more militant. They're becoming more anti-establishment. They're becoming definitely more suspicious of law enforcement, of police. They're becoming more anti-white. And I always, and so, you know, you were talking about incorporating Black history into lessons. And even though I'm an English professor, I, you know, use Black history as like a launching point, if you will. Like we're writing about Black history, but I tell them, this is not, you know, a racist class. I am not trying to get you to hate white people. In fact, I don't want you to hate anyone. But I want to expose you to certain ideas. And so I've had a lot of very interesting conversations with students back and forth. I used to live in Finland. And so when I tell that to my students, it blows their mind. You live in a country full of white people? Well, we kind of do here. But
why is that surprising?
Yeah, we do.
So I can hear you, but again,
and this is only in 2 years of teaching at Howard, So it's been a real eye opener for me because I didn't have that same experience when I was in school. And I didn't go to the HBCU. I went to the University of Colorado for undergrad and then NYU for grad. But I didn't have the same conflict. I had other conflicts.
No, but there are generational things going on, but okay. And even within the last 5 years, if you're talking about the nuances that we see, there's an increasing cynicism and militancy that's coming. Okay. Yep. I don't think it's the big shift was Trayvon. Okay. Yep. And by the way, that was a shift away from the belief that the American government, even with a black man as president, was going to transform their lives. And so they didn't really mean to go to the streets, if you will. That was not anybody's intention when Obama was elected. But before Obama left office, there was this growing unhappiness and uneasiness about what the state could and could not do for you. And so people were beginning to take it to the street despite Obama. They got off their best behavior that people were on. And I mean, the students were like, oh, wow. And in ways that I never imagined, people really thought that Obama could transform America. They really thought pretty very
yeah, they did.
Or that he was the president for the
entire United States. And that's right. And by the way, there's a kind of reverse 60s going on, right? At the beginning of the 1960s, you know, there was a kind of liberal mentality among black activists. By the end of the 1960s, you're almost at a kind of radical anti-Americanism among black students. Okay. Well, anyway, so it's a kind of, but solidly black. In a way, there's been this move backwards, if you will, from a kind of, starts out really pro-black. You know, Black Lives Matter is an awfully black organization. They're unapologetically black. Okay. So we've talked about this going on for a while. So the decade starts out like that. Now, what the shifts that have taken place within this decade has been the rise to the fore of a kind of militant integrationism, okay, which I wouldn't have called Black Lives Matter was pretty much a multicultural pluralist dimension to it, okay? Increasingly, though, you see people and students who really want the American dream but don't think they're going to get it. Mm-hmm. And all these obstacles in their way are based on race in their estimation, okay? Or it's based on class, and you can't even depend on black people who are in positions to help you out. So it's like poor black people or unempowered black people for themselves. They have to struggle for this. And so there's a lot going on with it. So, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but the baseline is still set by Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. All right, Olivia, let's get a question in from you.
My question is, one, I respect history because I think history is going to have us be able to look to the future. My question is, though, that history seems so, like, broken and divided, meaning as though, what is the missing link, sir, that is missing for us to unite? You know, how they used to. We used to unite as a people, and now
when you say used to, when are you talking about, Olivia?
I'm talking about when I watched Selma, the movie, when I watched all the things people used to do, and now as a people here, we're so divided.
You're talking about black people.
Are you talking about black people?
I'm talking about black people, people of color, and what is the missing link?
Okay, well, let's talk about this. If there's this. Historically, there's a myth of unity, okay? And at any given moment, when you're on the ground, you find more conflict and division than people present to you in their nice package, right? Whether these are documentaries or whether these are history books, we get these romantic folks who talk about everybody was getting along, that, you know, Malcolm and Martin were heading in the same direction. Mm-hmm. All these kinds of analysis. So, but the truth of the matter is, anywhere you go where there's a social movement going on, there are competing players, there are competing ideologies, and there's a lot of ego. Okay, you know, if humans are involved, there are egos at play. And to the extent that Jesus Christ was human, he had an ego too. So wherever you go in dealing with human history, you're going to see that there's a lot of jockeying around. Now, having said that, that's because you're too close. And what I'm saying is you get too close up on the pictures, when you get in the inside of the tent, if you will, you'll see all kind of division, all kind of name calling, all kind of everything. When you step out, you will find that some people in that tent actually represent the majority of the people, even if it's just, it doesn't have to be a great majority, but there is still this general tendency of the people, okay? And so then when you go back to the 1960s, you can see, well, from the 50s to the 60s, you can see this shift take place. You can see the shift take place from liberal integrationism being the main thrust in the 1950s, with people like Malcolm and the Nation of Islam being the ones that's challenging that,
mm-hmm.
to going into the early to mid-1960s, where the integrationists are on the run. Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. one of the reasons that people think that they're converging Martin and Malcolm is because Malcolm is actually winning the youth, and he's winning the northern people, and the movement is moving north. And so King is chasing Malcolm, if you will, trying to stay relevant, okay? Mm-hmm. And people confuse that, in my estimation, for some kind of Malcolm, Martin becoming a radical. Actually, Martin remains, to my way of thinking, a liberal trying to catch up a more militant population who's questioning integration, yep. okay? And so, in other words, when the unity goes, the unity is never quite really there, but then I tell my Black Power friends, did you notice that you outstripped the people? You think COINTELPRO, the government's effort to oppress the Black folks who wanted revolution, you think that brought it to an end? Actually, what brought it to an end was that you had outstripped the people, because most Black people did not want a revolution.
So I was going to say, I think we look at the past through rose-colored glasses, and we think, because we see all these images of unity and things like that, but I don't think it's much different than it was. Yeah, I don't think it's much different than it was then than it is now, where we have, like he said, competing ideologies and people with different views. And like, I would believe a majority of people did not want to fight, but there were people that did stand up and stand out.
Does history?
a lot of ethnic groups. Very quickly, I wanted to call you Ro, Olivia. Very quickly, I think within a lot of ethnic groups, people assume that we're all a monolith.
Yep.
That we're all the same. Viewpoint. And that we all should be activists in the same way. And that's just not the case.
Or even feel the same way. Some of us don't even feel the same way about race relations.
But does history foresee us actually coming together again or coming together for a purpose?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you this. I got one of my favorite phrases. History don't love you. History don't care about you. Okay, so... History don't care if you ever get together again. History don't care if you lose your mind and forget history altogether. History don't care. So, I mean, I say that to say is that you have the history you make, you have a future you make, okay? And that nothing's on autopilot in this world. I mean, there are tendencies at any point in time, there are tendencies, right? But it's this thing is like one big game of physics with all kind of rocks just up being flying towards one another, and anything could be put on a new trajectory in a second, okay? I mean, look, this country could have gone the way it was for a very long time if Trump had decided not to run for office, okay? And so it's kind of unfortunate he was the right or wrong man at the moment, that maybe some of these tendencies might have come about 40 years later, 30 years later. He changed that trajectory.
You're saying he actually sparked a new movement towards...
No, the tendencies were there. I saw these tendencies.
It's true.
I saw them in the 90s. Okay, I saw them. I saw people in the South who were white, who were sick of immigration by early 1990s. They didn't want any part of it, okay? But the Republican Party was still strongly for immigration at that point. And as late as 2004 and 5, Bush tried to get immigration reform, and they didn't want any part of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, 9/11 changes this. And so there's some things that lead to Trump. There's no doubt about it. The election of Obama is a big one. Yes. It's like the black quarterback happened when Obama won, okay? And so anybody who thought that this thing was going to go back to being white, they saw Obama, and for some people, this blew their mind. Mm-hmm. On and on and on. And so I'm saying, but Trump is the one who galvanized all of it.
If
it had not been brought together. If it had not been brought together, so there are plenty of antecedents, but there's always these things that could happen, but you have a movement that can bring them about, or you can have a person that brings about a kind of gathering of sentiment among white. Because look, he brought out how many people to vote?
Yeah. I mean, and it was because of Trump. That's absolutely right.
Absolutely.
Well, 15 million, right? It was about 15.
Yeah.
How many people?
So these things do matter. Leadership matters. The times matter. The preconditions could exist, but the right person, the right movement has to come along.
Yeah. There is a question online that I want to get to. We're running out of time, but Matt Davis asks, how do you think the radical anti-American movement will look like in the future within Black people? Do you think it will die down, remain stagnant, or grow? And to your point, you know, if you know, saying that Trump kind of created this new radical, well, not created, but kind of sparked,
galvanized
and sparked this new radical movement. What do you think it's going to look like in the future?
Well, I'm going to tell you what I think the dominant tendency will be, not to say that it won't happen. Okay. There are a lot of people who would have wanted something much more radical to take place at this moment, whether this be on racial grounds, whether this would be on economic class grounds. But the reality was, we have been and we will be fighting white nationalism, what people tried to deny existed. And the dynamic then is, are you for a country that's devoted to white nationalism? Or are you for a country that's devoted to inclusion, devoted to a nation based on civic ideals? Now, in all of this, you've got people who are anti-American, or should we say, are just hypercritical of America. Don't even, and by the way, the fact that people won't, who are Black, won't outright call themselves anti-American, who really will tell you something. You know, when people refuse a title that seems to be a descriptor, and they refuse it, it's because they don't want to fully own it. So they're not really as anti-American as sometimes they would suggest. They're just simply hypercritical of America and want a new America. Now, sometimes they think that they can kind of bowl over the rest of the country and have their way. For instance, people really believe today that, you know, this country will never be anything if we don't get our reparations. So they say the price of peace is reparations. Well, they're still looking for reconciliation. Anytime you, you know, reparations comes two ways. You take it or somebody gives it to you. Okay, so if you take it, it's revolution and stop talking, let's get to fighting. Okay? If you are trying to talk your way through that resolution and have some repair, it means that you really are part of the program. You are part of Americanism. You just want a new deal. Okay? So I'm saying that those folks, most of these reparationists I'm talking about now, in the old days, they used to call themselves Black nationalists. Today, they're some of the best integrationists I've ever met. So I don't think there's that much hostility to anti-Americanism out here. I think most people just simply want to be fully incorporated as equals, which they don't think that they were.
That is exactly right.
Exactly.
I totally agree.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. I can't emphasize this enough, at least for me. I am not anti-American. I am so far from being anti-white. However, I want the same privileges. I want access to the same resources. I want the same type of equality. And I think if you talk to the average Black person, the average minority, that's all we're asking for. That's all we're asking for. We live here.
Absolutely. I like to mess with people's heads because I'm one of the few people who would tell you just straight outright that I'm a liberal American nationalist. But you see, what you just described to me is liberal American nationalist.
What I mean by this is this:
you believe in a country in which we can all belong, regardless of race. That's number one. That's civic ideals, nationalism. Okay. Number two, you love your country. Okay, and you just wanted to love you back. That's why people say we love a country that don't love us back. Okay, all right, that's true. And you would probably fight and die for your country if push came to shove. Most Black people have throughout history. Okay, so if you'll defend it, that means you will die for it, which means, you know, that's your nationalism is right there. Now, a lot of the people who will say that Black nationalists won't die for Black people, you could die for Black people every day, any day of your life.
Yeah.
Any day you want to.
I'm a couple of comments online real quick, and then Mike Winter says, 1996, Clinton policy was opposed to immigration. It was an emergency. Folks didn't know that history. Jacqueline Robbins says, there's been a panic among some white folks about statistics indicating that they will be the minority by 2024. The insurrection was a spasm of white nationalism in all its ugliness. And Mike Winter says, just leave me be. Leave me be like you. Say it again.
I thought he was referring to me with that, but go ahead.
I think he is actually. I realized it as I was reading it. Kevin Thaxton says France received reparations from Haiti. English slave owners received reparations from their slaves after the slaves were
freed. We don't even have to go to France. Hello, Asian Americans receive reparations from the U.S. government over World War II. That's a completely different topic. But
reparations
have happened here before. I just particularly feel in 2021, we're not likely to get it all these years later. That doesn't mean we still shouldn't fight for it. But, you know, as the clock is ticking, the excuse becomes, like Herschel Walker said incorrectly,
your boy
was 130 years ago. So it's there's a lot. That's a complex topic. But yes, Asian Americans got reparations for World War II, for the internment camps that they were placed in this country from World War II. So it's been done before on U.S. soil. My last
I'm going to tell you this. I'm just going to, you know, again, we all owe reparations. But let me say this, and this is another one of these unpopular things I'll say. I'm a ghetto boy.
And you mean a rap group or
ghetto boy? Ghetto rap
boys. I grew up in a very bad neighborhood.
Okay.
And
in people Chicago, could owe you're from Chicago, right?
Yeah. People could owe you, but if you can't collect, they don't owe you.
That's an interesting concept.
And if the people who oppressed you would pay you reparations, then they're not the evil monsters you said they were. And if you had the power to take the money, you wouldn't need the money.
That's true.
So all this reparations talk is really not a demand, it's really a complaint, it's really a want. And it really eats up a lot of intellectual and political energy. Now you're old, and that ain't gonna get you nothing to eat tonight. Not gonna get you anything to eat tomorrow. Okay? And the same people who are now trying to disenfranchise you so that they can rule you as a white minority, you think they're gonna give you reparations without you taking them? See, this is where it gets unreal for me. And even though this is current events, I'm just a historian enough to know that, historically speaking, if they give you reparations, it's a dime. It's not even a dime on the dollar. And it's because it costs them nothing. It costs them nothing, and it's a token gesture.
Yeah.
But if they owe you a lot, you're going to have to come get it. Okay? Because if they owe you too much,
I think we're going to have the good professor back to talk.
I think so too, because we got some more stuff to talk about. And of course, we're so out of time.
We didn't even talk about what's the.
I know. I was just thinking about that. I'm like, oh my God. I was going
to. I told you.
The father of my history, Carter G. Woodson.
Let's at least get that in. So let's at least talk a bit about that. And that'll be. I'll give you a final word on that.
Well, let me just say this. We're coming up on the centennial of Negro History Week, now Black History Month. And what people really need to understand is that Carter G. Woodson has created the longest running celebration of American history in the history of this country. February used to be American History Month. It failed as American History Month. Black people have made American history work by promoting Black history in February. It's the only history you're really going to get in a public celebration.
All right. So I did want to still give you any last words that you want to share with us, anything you want to impart on us before we let you go?
Well, keep looking out because I am going to publish. I wrote an essay on 13th-erism, the scandal of 13th-erism.
I can send you guys a link.
And then I'm working on a book on the topic, so I'll be in trouble about that. And I'm not going to write about reparations because I don't want to lose my last 5 friends.
And you were an amazing guest. We really appreciate you coming on, and we will have to get you back if you're up for it. We will have to get you back to talk again.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Professor Daryl Michael Scott from Howard University. Thank you so much for joining us.
Take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Wow, what an amazing guest.
Being a nerdy professor, the nerdy professor that I am, I totally underestimated how fun that segment was going to be.
I had a feeling. I don't know. I had a feeling about him. I thought he was going to be a blast. So, all right, let's get into our hot topics.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
What are we talking about today?
All right. So this is the way it works. Our hosts bring you hot topics they want to share. We'll ask, is this truth, lies, or shenanigans? Our panel will talk about it for a bit until time is up. And then we'll go to our audience for questions. So make sure you're talking to us in all our threads. We are listening. So for today, we are talking about, this is going to be Lizzie talking about canceling Hamilton. Explain, Lizzie, is this truth, lies, or shenanigans?
Again, I always get, the duality, the dichotomy. This is both truth and shenanigans. So there is a movement now, apparently, that I knew nothing about until this past week. But there's a movement now, there's a hashtag now, cancel Hamilton. So for those of you who are not in the know, we're not that familiar, Hamilton is a play about Alexander Hamilton, going through the history of Alexander Hamilton. It debuted in New York City in 2015 and became a huge success. Initially, it was in a public theater and then it went to Broadway. And it became so popular. I lived in New York. I've been in New York for 21 years. So I was in New York when it debuted. I've never seen it on Broadway. The tickets were over $2,000.
Yeah, crazy. Okay.
It was like the hottest ticket in town. Very popular. The play itself is a winner of 11 Tony Awards. It was nominated for Golden Globes. And so Disney Plus over the summer decided that they were going to bring it into their streaming service. So I think it was in July, the common folk who couldn't, you know, afford $2,000 per ticket, that you stream into Disney Plus and you could see the movie version of Hamilton. Well, when you have more access, that opens you up to more criticism. And so people, you know, at home watching Hamilton on Disney Plus started to criticize it because they said they thought that it glorified George Washington, who owned slaves. That even though Alexander Hamilton was an abolitionist and he was against slave ownership, he still worked very closely. He was kind of like a moderate, if you will, in that he worked very closely with other politicians who owned slaves. So now there's this whole big cancel Hamilton movement that has been going on since the summer. And there's been a lot of chatter on social media between you know, the Gen Z. I think it's Gen Z. Is that what we're in now? What generation are we in now?
It's probably Gen Z that's talking about it. It'd be the millennials. I don't know.
And, you know, Gen Z and some millennials and then old people like myself. And so my question to you all is, and I think this is our first cancel culture topic for today. We're going to have another one. But do you think Hamilton should be canceled? If you have seen Hamilton, panelists, did you watch it and feel like it was glorifying slave ownership? Let's start with Rob B.
I have not. So limited. But I mean, if you're setting something in a historical period and someone was rubbing elbows with people that may not have espoused the same ideology as you, embraced the same ideology as you, there's still historical place markers. I can see where George Washington is going to be. He's always going to be celebrated as one of the forefathers of your nation. So you're not going to remove him from the narrative. I can appreciate where someone may take exception if the narrative is about slavery abolition. Then I can see where people would take exception to it. But if it's part of the story, you can't cancel the story. You can't cancel history. History doesn't care. So just to piggyback off of what our guest was saying, history doesn't care about your feelings. It's just a series of facts and figures, and you need to use that information for the betterment of tomorrow. But I think that this might be buying into cancel culture, but this is coming from a point of view where I have not watched Hamilton.
Okay.
Olivia?
Have you seen Hamilton?
Okay, I have not watched Hamilton. But my question is, is it a historical artifact or historical representation? Because if it's an historical representation, how can we cancel history?
Okay,
that's interesting. I want to actually jump onto that because she kind of is making my point that I was going to make. So I feel like everyone has an opinion, right? Not everyone's opinion is right, wrong, whatever. But you're entitled to your opinion. And you know, is the story about, by the way, I did see Hamilton, but is the story about someone that supported or participated in slave ownership? Yes. Yes, it is. And is it horrible to sensationalize slave owners? Absolutely. But, you know, this is during a time when people owned slaves. So does it mean that you can't tell any other story about people that owned slaves? You know, that you don't tell any other story other than the slavery story? No, because it's history. It's a historical moment. And, you know, maybe could he have addressed the slavery issue a little bit more? Sure, he could have. But the thing is, it's his art. You know, it's Lin-Manuel's art. It's his creation. And we have choices to experience it or not experience it. We have those choices.
Exactly.
If we want to go to the show, we can go to the show. If you don't like the show, don't go to the show. You know, but he's not, it's not like he's sensationalizing slavery or saying that slavery was a good thing. It's not like he's, you know, he's not glorifying slave ownership in any way. So, you know, let him tell the story he wants to tell. If that's the story he wants to talk about, and that's the way he wants to tell it, you know, we choose to go, we don't go. That's the way I see it.
So this is how we going to start off? We going to be agreeing today, Neo?
Are we agreeing? Wait, oh, we're agreeing.
So
look
is
at
it
that.
History?
No, say it ain't so.
It is a historic, yes, Olivia, it's historical. It's a historical.
Then that's what it is. History is history. We can't change it.
But I also think people need to keep in mind, like, unlike cinema, where you can have, you know, a biopic, where you can have a documentary, this is theater.
Yes.
Everything is melodramatic in theater.
Yes.
Everything in theater is a performance.
Yes.
And it's from a certain person's perspective. And like Neo said, it's not like, you know, it's a play that is glorifying or is saying that this is acceptable. They're just elevating the story, if you will. They're adding song and drama and performance to the story. And nothing about Broadway or plays is an encyclopedia. Like, if you want the full story of Hamilton, then do your research.
Yes, which I did, actually. It forced me to do that.
Yeah, enjoy it for what it is. So I've seen it several times on Disney Plus now. Got to, you know, earn that streaming membership. But there was nothing until this topic came up to me about a week ago. There was nothing that concerned me about Hamilton, about the script, about the performance, about the angle. And I kind of don't have a problem with cancel culture because I do, in some respect, believe that people have a right to say, I'm not going to support this anymore. But at the same time, I think I have a problem with some of the arguments that start culture. That's where I am. And so I just think, you know, people on Twitter, you know, people on Twitter, they bitch just because they want to bitch.
That's what it is. That's so true.
Where I'm just like, this is a non-issue for me. This is a non-issue for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I totally agree. I mean, so Olivia, now what are your thoughts? Now that you've asked your question, what are your thoughts?
I mean, my thoughts are if it's a historical event, it needs to be said. Cancel culture, like Lizzie said, it's becoming too much. If it's history, you can't cancel it. Yeah. it doesn't make sense. But it's one thing when you're a racist and you have this rhetoric that's actually unrelated, and you're trying to create a racist rhetoric, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. with this history, it's history. It's history. We professors, Lizzie, professors, our other professor that just came on, we need history to educate ourselves. I'm not about erasing history.
Yeah. You know, even if it's not pretty history.
But also
even if it's not pretty.
To add to what Olivia just said, we also need to come up with creative ways to tell that historical story to keep these young people engaged. And Hamilton, you know, the play, the Broadway play, that was an excellent example of how to get people talking about who Alexander Hamilton was. About George Washington, about slavery, that I would not have been able to do as well in my classroom.
So are they canceled or not canceled?
Oh, they're not.
Not for me. No, not for me.
So this was, it was quote canceled. They're not canceling the actual play, but you know, like.
Good job.
But there is a hashtag, Olivia. There is a hashtag, cancel Hamilton. So this is a thing on Twitter.
Oh, no.
This is a thing on Twitter.
Not as it's history.
No. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good play. I mean, I've talked a lot about how I walk into certain things with high impressions or expectations, and then I'm disappointed. I wasn't disappointed with Hamilton. Hamilton was met my expectations. So we got some comments online. Daria Winter, history is not even history, but a perspective on the past. And that's a great point. It's the I like the perspective on a past because we all see it differently. I mean, nobody can see the history the same. What were you going to say, Olivia?
Okay. And do we want to do cancel culture? Because I don't know who Hamilton was written by, but do we want to do cancel culture when the history is written by a Caucasian? I mean, because we've had some shocking history, even from Roots, when they beat him and they told him his name is Toby. Nobody said cancel Roots. You know what I mean? So my question is, do we only cancel the people that are telling it rather than
rather than the actual story. Rather than the actual story. And my point to that is, so there's another play that was on Broadway that was very controversial that I believe came out in 2018 or 2019. It's called Slave Play. And it's by a playwright named Jeremy O. Harris, who is Black. And a lot of people did not like the story. They found it to be offensive. It's about a Black slave, I believe, falling in love with a white slave master. People correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't seen it. I want to show it in my class, but I don't have access to it yet. But definitely Black Twitter was offended. A lot of Black people were offended by this particular, because how dare you, as a Black man, as a Black playwright, show on stage a love affair between a slave and a slave owner? And well, it may have happened. Yep. That's the story he's telling. Like
this story.
Yep. Yeah.
So Mike Wolf says, if it's not as if there's an official cancel list somewhere, people who choose to watch it on Disney Plus are not necessarily bad people. At the same time, I have no problem with people who use huge cultural events like Hamilton to remind us. Kevin Thack says, don't watch it. You're in charge of the remote.
Don't watch it.
And
I got Disney Plus for the sole purpose of watching this. You didn't have to do that.
Yep. And Gianni Storm says, cancel culture is canceled. All right, let's get to our next. Let's get to our next hot topic.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
All right, Olivia, you're up next.
Come through.
After our quick fire on Gaga's dogs, you have a story with a sadder ending for another bulldog. Is this truth, lies, or shenanigans?
This is a truth, and a lie. That's it. because I don't want to put on shenanigans
because it wasn't funny.
Lives have been lost. Yep. So for me, if you're not familiar, there is a TikTok video of a French bulldog having a C-section, and. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The French bulldog is having a C-section, and we're going to see it. It was live on TikTok.
Well, it wasn't live, but it was posted on TikTok.
Straight.
But yeah, go ahead. Explain what was happening.
This French bulldog was pregnant, and the owner, whom is one of those guys there, had hired a fake veterinarian or a fake doctor to do the procedure of a C-section. He paid him about $650, and he did the surgery online. By the way, a 15-year-old was filming this. Now, the dog died. Babies died. Two babies died. This gentleman has said that He hired the fake doctor because he couldn't afford for them to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Now, I wish you could show the picture of their house because they live in a mansion.
Oh, I didn't see the picture.
I haven't seen their house.
Oh, they live in a mansion. And my question to the panel is, what do you feel like they have been charged, but the time hasn't been, we don't know what their time is. They've been charged with animal cruelty. But what do you as the panel feel their time should be? Their punishment.
All right, Robbie, go ahead.
Lifetime ban on any pet ownership. Remove that privilege from them. As much as we think that they're a right and they're a property, these are sentient beings. It is a privilege to be able to care for and live with these critters. I understand what someone's saying about the vet bills, and just because they live in a mansion doesn't mean they have money. It means that they could be well overextended into the rent. So the fact that if they're saying that they can't afford it, might be true because trying to keep up with the Joneses breaks a lot of people. So if you're living in a big house, you may not have two pennies to rub together. The real victim, and puppies die during birth. That's just that is a natural thing. So two puppies dying out of the litter at birth. Okay. The mom dying, that I'm going to put squarely on someone being unlicensed and not necessarily having the right operating theater and the right tools at their disposal because they are unlicensed. These people should be facing whatever fines the state will levy against them, but a lifetime ownership on or lifetime ban on pet ownership is, I think, appropriate.
I think they should definitely go to jail for a period of time because at least I would say at least the it depends on the real circumstances. I mean, we're still hearing about this story, but if we're saying there was a person impersonating a veterinarian, that's the person who should be penalized the most. The owner, I mean, trying to take shortcuts. I don't know. If I trust someone is saying that they're a vet and that, hey, they say they could do this, and I might be willing to do that, and I would film it. I'd be willing but. I don't know. I certainly wouldn't post it on TikTok afterwards, especially if I knew the dog passed away. But this just shows a clear disrespect for animals in general. They're probably similar to a puppy mill, or they're trying to just breed or something like that. So they probably really don't care very much. And so this is probably an eye opener for them. But there should definitely be some type of penalty for them, especially. The thing about the story that bothered me the most was the fact that they really didn't use anesthesia. They gave him some type of
Why would they have access to anesthesia if they're not a real doctor?
Right, exactly. That's a good point.
Because it was a fake doctor.
Yeah. So they didn't use anesthesia. So he's operating on this dog with no anesthesia. But he was incapacitated. I think they used some type of smelling something or something to put him to kind of like put him to sleep. I don't know what they used, but I saw it in the video when they had his face smelling something. And so he was definitely not anesthetized. But yeah, it's something should happen to these guys. I can't really say.
Listen, ignorance of the law, ignorance of the fact that, I didn't know he wasn't licensed. Although I thought I read that the owner of this dog did know that this person wasn't licensed.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
That he wasn't licensed.
That fact does not exempt you from responsibility or punishment. To me, this was like mutilation and murder. And I went in and took a knife to my sweet beloved cat, Remy, and cut him open. I would be jailed. Like, they need to serve, both parties need to serve jail. I don't care if you feel like you can't afford this procedure, then take the damn dog to the Humane Society. You knew that this was not the right thing to do. $600? Who's given a C-section for anything for $600? You knew that this was not right. And then to where are you going where there is a medical procedure like this and your child is allowed to come in mm-hmm. and take video?
What? Yes, ma'am. Yes, like ma'am.
No. They both need to serve jail time, heavy yep. penalties. Like Rob said, you can no longer own any pets ever. Like, this was just so disgusting to me. And honestly, I never even thought that I would be such an animal rights advocate until I got an animal. And mm-hmm. so every time I see something cruel happen to an animal, I look at my cat and I give him treats because I feel so bad. I feel so badly. Like, I could not imagine just being this insensitive and stupid. Like, horrible.
All right, Olivia, your final thought?
No, yeah, I agree with everyone. I think these people need to serve jail time. Second of all, like Lizzie says, play stupid games, you win stupid rewards. But my problem is these innocent lives didn't have an option. So these people need to suffer. And I know I cannot say it. I know it will never happen. But these people need to be cut with a C-section with no anesthesia. And they need to lose some of their babies too. Okay, I'm very highly disturbed, but I hope they get the highest penalty. Should I read the number now or later?
Okay. Is this in Florida?
Yeah.
Because if this was in Florida, we know that, you know, likelihood of them getting any good time is not going to happen in Florida. All kinds of crazy.
Well, I will stick them with a knife and cut them open myself.
Look at her.
Joking, y'all. If you guys have any, if you notice any, because I'm walking and I see dogs outside at 20 degrees temperature. If you notice any animal cruelty, if you notice any animals being abused, call the 1-800 number, 1-800-540-SPCA. Again, 1-800-540-SPCA. Report the animal cruelty. They're not like children, but they are in a way like children because they can't speak for themselves. And let us speak for them.
Children. They're more vulnerable than children because, like you said, they can't speak. They can't tell you what's going on, what's happening. So, yeah.
So, Gianni pointed out, she said, and she put a knife on the screen.
What?
she said cut them, right? Kevin Thaxton pointed out, why is there whimsical music in the video? That was another thing we couldn't understand.
They
either.
Didn't want to cover up that baby screaming. They didn't want to cover up that mother screaming.
Yeah. Daria Winter says, we have a generation that is not read and therefore studies the past. I'm going too far back. Johnny Storm says, I would never rely on an unlicensed random to open up my dog's stomach.
For right. anything. Like, what if I need a C-section, I'm pregnant, which is not ever happening. But if I'm pregnant and I need an emergency C-section, you think I'm gonna go to my neighbor down the hall?
Exactly. $600
to cut me open? Like, come on.
So jail time, we all agree that jail time needs to be, they need to all serve.
I don't think Robbie said jail time. Did Robbie say jail time? I said jail.
I said whatever penalties they have coming to them.
No. In jail or no jail?
That's what she wants to know.
She got the knife, Robbie. Yeah, you better answer the question.
It's all right. I'm safe. She can't travel across the border just yet.
He's protected.
But these people should be punished. Yeah, a jail time would be appropriate because this is animal cruelty. It's needless suffering.
All right, let's move on to the next hot topic.
Truth, lies, shenanigans.
All right, RB, you've got a topic about a British Columbia mayor. Is this truth, lies, or shenanigans?
Truth and shenanigans. Par for the course, my friend. So Lorraine Michetti, the mayor of Pouce-Coupe, a small northern BC village, says she won't step down over social media posts that she made comparing gun owners in Canada to Holocaust victims and other disparaging remarks over time. So There's new restrictions on handguns and firearms in Canada that are being pushed through. And the quote from her social media, from her personal social media, not her official mayor's social media, important because that's part of her defense. Everyone can probably have them, just not Caucasian. This is just about everything. I feel like a Jew back in the day waiting for my cattle car.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You see, when you hear the quote, it's a very different...
Right? It's very different from the headline. So one of her fellow counselors, Ken Drover, told the CBC that he's upset that the mayor's social media activity is casting a negative light on the town of about 730 people. Fun fact, it's about a 20-minute drive southeast of Dawson's Creek. Wink!
Dawson's Creek.
So when Mr. Drover questioned Ms. Machetti about the post during a council meeting, he asked her, "You would liken your position to a Jew in a cattle car waiting to go?" And he was cut off by Machetti, who said, "Once they take our guns away, back when Hitler, that's what it was all about," she said. So, you know, this is again someone who's doubling down on it, but she has vowed to, she's refusing to step down despite the outcry from her town, from social media. She feels that she has apologized and she is seeking cultural sensitivity training, and that she is a victim of bullying and cancel culture. So bringing it back to that cancel culture topic, and I guess let's start with Olivia. Let's get your take on this.
Hold on. Come back to me. 1 second.
Go ahead, Lizzie.
So I guess, is this cancel culture or should she be stepping down?
I don't think this is cancel culture. I think that this is in violation of your duties as an elected official. I don't understand why people continuously compare things to the Holocaust, continuously compare things to slavery. Like, gun ownership has nothing to do with Jews in concentration camps being slaughtered and murdered and gassed during the Holocaust. Like, how do you find a comparison in that? I even get upset when you have people in this country, you know, earning actual money and saying, oh, you know, I'm being treated like a slave. No, slaves didn't get paid. You're not getting whipped. Maybe I'll give you indentured servants, but you're not a slave. People, stop comparing your situation to these atrocities. It makes absolutely no sense, and it's offensive. And then she tried to say, you know, play the victim card. Oh, well, you know, everyone can do it, you know, except Caucasians. What? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? This is not a race-based thing. Gun ownership has nothing to do. The law isn't going to be, okay, there's a different gun ownership law for Rob B, if I lived in Canada, further, Rob B versus me. Like, stop it. Stop it. And yes, I do think she needs to step down. I don't know what the actual laws are there in Canada, in British Columbia, for removing someone from office. It's very difficult to do here in the States, especially over a topic like this. But I do think she needs to step down. I do think she needs to be canceled because she is a detriment. The play Hamilton is not a detriment to society. She, as an elected official, is a detriment. Someone who has these views and who is espousing this type of garbage. So yes, get rid of her. Get rid of her, y'all.
Can you do me a favor, Robbie? Can you repeat the quote?
So the quote regarding the guns is that everyone probably can have them, just not Caucasian. That is just about everything. I feel like a Jew back in the day waiting for my cattle car.
Like, that is just so horribly offensive.
Yeah, just, I mean,
but that
even
was
if
Brian Machetti, not the mayor, who made these posts.
Even still, I mean, it can make a difference depending on the significance of a quote like that. I mean, you know, if you're doing things on your personal time and you're sure, but But when you're doing something so egregious and ridiculous, I mean, if someone, if you, even if it was cancel culture, I don't see this as cancel culture, but it's very similar to when someone elects you to an office, they have an expectation of you, you know, because when we elect people, we have expectations as representatives of us. And if, as a representative, you don't represent the values that we feel are right, then you've got to go. And there's nothing wrong with wanting that. And so should she step down? Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially if British Columbia wants her to step down, if her constituents want her to step down, she should step down. She should, I mean, because it says a lot about who she is, to put it out there like that. So Olivia, did you catch all of that?
No.
Basically, she compared her being restricted by gun laws to being a Jew about to go to the slaughterhouse.
And she's not a Jew. And she's not a Jew, right?
Not that it should matter, but yes.
She has an Italian last name, but I don't know what her ethnicity is.
Italian last name.
Cancel her.
She's not even a Jew. She can't say that.
All right, let's go to our comments online real quick.
Saying it like that, a Jew should be saying, should we be saying she's not even Jewish instead? I'm always kind of iffy.
I mean, it's like I can talk about myself, but you cannot talk about me, you know, like, in, because there's some words that are very sensitive to each culture, and there's some words that can only be used by each culture. So I'm not a Jew, so I shouldn't speak like Jews.
I'm going to say I disagree with that necessarily, but I disagree with certain cultures just being able to say certain words that other cultures can't say. I don't agree with that personally.
You're my brother.
No, I don't agree with that either. Like, I don't want Muriel Bowser, the D.C. mayor, to, you know, get on camera tomorrow and start using the N-word. No.
So then we're not doing that.
I can't see your face, Olivia.
I can't see your face. And other people cannot. Then that's
Olivia.
What the conversation.
Olivia, I've had this conversation.
Let me just say this. I mean, there may be some people that accept that from you. Do not use the N-word to me, around me, directed at me. Anybody,
me
black, white, you, including you.
Yeah.
Black, white,
I don't accept it from
anyone. Period. I don't believe in this notion that we have reclaimed. No, we haven't reclaimed anything. If we still have a majority that's using the word as it was intended to be used. So no.
Because you set yourself up.
I think it's just like that woman. She needs to keep the Jewish stuff out of her mouth. She's not Jewish.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. I'm just saying, I don't think it matters that she's a Jew or not a Jew. And she's just keeping it out of her mouth.
If she was a Jew, she could have more, you know, more.
No, I disagree with that.
But I guarantee you there would be tons of Jewish people who would be offended that she is likening gun ownership to the Holocaust. Like, that is horrible.
Okay. True.
That is horrible.
All right. So let me get some real quick comments. I'm going to make this quick. I'm not going to be able to go through all of them.
Don't y'all out there in TLS world come at me with the N-word. I'm telling you. I'm warning you right now.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you. Real quick.
I'm using the N-word.
Johnny says, I feel like she should resign, period. Mike Wolf says she shouldn't step down. People don't become this way overnight. The people who elected her should have known and should have been forced to live with this dummy for the rest of her term. Kevin Daxton says, Mike Winter, first world problems.
not everyone, you know, where the city where she's mayor, not all of those people voted for her. Like, you know, she didn't win the election by 100%. So that's not an effective argument by any means.
She's a victim of idiocy. That's from Kevin Daxton. All right. That's great. Good job. Good hot topics. Good to have you back, Olivia.
Right, Olivia, your dog is very good, because let me tell you, Remy Cat would not be sitting here.
No, he came from a shelter. Them shelter animals act different than the other animals.
They do.
All right. Let's get our game show in really, really quick. We're gonna make this as quick as possible. All right, today's game is 5 second guess. We've played it before. I'll go to each of you for a turn and ask you to list three things in 5 seconds. If the three things match the topic in 5 seconds, you get a point. I'll be judging whether or not it matches. The person with the most points gets the final thought of the show. Okay, we're going quick. So Lizzie, name three indoor sports played indoors. Go.
Basketball. Hockey and
oh, ailed it too long. All right, how could you miss that one? That's a sports one.
I was too busy sticking my tongue out. First of all, you didn't give a test question to begin with, which you normally do. So I was thrown off.
All right, name three characters in Toy Story, Rob B.
Oh man, my kids are gonna kill me because I'm blanking. Woody, Pig, and Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, you got it just in time.
I've never even seen Toy Story, so I definitely would have lost that one.
Okay, Olivia, name three muscles.
Well, I don't know what those are.
Muscles? Muscles. Muscles. I'll give you a couple extra seconds.
Muscles. My arms. My legs. My thighs.
All right, I'm going to give it to you.
Give her another question.
I can't. It's out of order, but I'll give it to you. That you got it. You got it, man. You got it, man. All right. So Robbie's lead. Robbie and Olivia are in the lead. All right. Lizzie Enders, you ready? Name three things that come in a box. Now, starting now.
Chocolate, vodka, and...
Oh, what the heck? Failed it.
That timer kills you. That timer is your kryptonite.
Clearly. All right, this is going to be between Rob B and Olivia then. All right, name three things that go with chips, Rob B, starting now.
Lips, chips.
Dip, soda.
Chips.
And pizza.
Pizza, yes, you got it in time. Okay, I'll go with pizza.
No. Yeah.
Nailed it. All right, Olivia.
Lips, chips, and chips.
Your brother cheats, girl. Your brother cheats.
All right, Olivia, ready? We got name three. This is gonna be tough. Name three online search engines. Name three.
Google, YouTube,
Yahoo.
Google, YouTube, and Yahoo.
Oh, that's close. That was close.
YouTube,
you got a little help there too.
It's YouTube a search engine?
I know. I'm a little iffy on that.
It has a search feature. I'll give it that.
All right. We're going to do it. We're going to take it down to the last question. All right. We're going to take one more round between Robbie and Olivia. Let's see. All right. So 2-2. All right. You're out of this, Lizzie.
I'm going to help my girl.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Oh, this is Lizzie's terms. Oh, it says Lizzie, but this is Robbie. All right. Name three boy bands, Robbie.
Direction, NSYNC. And
what?
In your face, Rob B. In your face.
Nailed it.
Like the easiest question of the day.
All right.
Give me that one. See? Come on.
All right, Olivia.
Question.
Olivia, ready for this one?
Olivia, easy. Easy.
This is it. Name three video games.
Mario Brothers.
Miss Pac-Man.
That one with the gun. It's called
Sit down, love. We can't see you.
We can't see you.
All right.
Waiting to die.
Olivia, remember the Gorilla Glue. You're sitting on Gorilla Glue. You're sitting on Gorilla Glue.
We can't see.
Waiting to die.
So are they gonna get another round?
Yeah, so we're gonna do this. We're gonna do it this way.
Olivia, you're getting another round, so if I say it, just repeat after me. Just repeat after me, girl.
I've been sitting on Gorilla Glue for like an hour.
Me too.
We can't see you. We can't see you.
But
all
I'm
right.
trying to get you to win this game. Beat Rob B.
Okay, pro.
Beat Rob B.
All right, bro.
All right, Rob B, name three parts of the face starting now.
Lips, nose, forehead.
All right.
That
can't
even be a question.
Got an easy one. You got an easy one. All right, nailed it. All right. So this is for Olivia. This is for the werewolf of the tie again. We'll see. You ready? Ready, Olivia? All right.
She got this.
Name three flavors of yogurt. Three.
Strawberry, banana, vanilla. All right.
All right, we nailed it. All right, I'm sorry, Robbie. We're just going to give the win to Olivia. Good job, Olivia. Good job. Good job. All right, that was fun. That was fun. Let's get in some shout-outs real quick. All right, let's start off with Lizzie. Lizzie, shout out.
I know they're not watching, but I still wanted to give a symbolic shout out to my Finnish neighbors. I can't stress enough how happy I am to have Finnish people living on my floor, one door down. Their beautiful son, Benjamin, always comes and makes my cat happy. So moi kiitoksia. Kiitoksia.
All right, Robbie Rock.
Shout out to Mom, shout out to Jose, shout out to Professor Scott who joined us. That was such a wonderful conversation, and I really hope he'll take us up on the offer to come back because, man, just a fun storyteller with a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, we definitely have to try to get him back, Lizzie. You have to work that out, Lizzie. All right, Olivia E., shout out.
Okay, mine is to my mom, my husband, my mom, my dad, awesome, my best friend. And I want to shout out Tuesday, the 125th anniversary of the Battle of Ottawa. And because of that battle, Africa was never colonized.
Africa.
And I just want everyone to know that everything is inside of you.
You mean Ethiopia?
You have everything inside of you. You have strength. You have... Yeah. No. Huh?
You said Africa. You mean Ethiopia wasn't colonized.
No, Africa wasn't colonized because Ethiopia wasn't colonized. Okay?
You mean all of Africa wasn't colonized?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We gotta get
this word. So they can never take that credit because we fought that battle, and we fought that battle. We didn't have anything. We didn't have guns. We didn't have anything. So at the end of the day, it's all about what we have inside of us. We have our own faith. We have our own strength. We have our own mind. And everyone needs to go out every day with what they have in their mind, what they have in their heart, and go be strong and go do everything they need to do.
I think Olivia's giving her final thought. Getting her final thought out there a little early.
Yes.
All right. So I'm giving a special shout out to my mother-in-law who's watching, Miss Nola Blaine. She struggles with technology sometimes. But she made sure she figured out how to watch this show. She said she loved the interview last week with Miss Carlotta Walls and the Little Rock Now 9. So big shout out, big hugs to my mother-in-law. See you soon. Actually, I'm going to see you tomorrow. So, all right. And hey, if you have a business event or person you want to give a shout out to, follow our hosts on social media and reach out to any of them on their social media feeds. We may just shout you out live. That's all the time we have for today's show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. We hope that maybe you learned something, gained a new perspective, or even got some things off your chest. Don't forget, we need your support to keep this going. Like, follow, subscribe. And also, if you'd like to donate, go to paypal.me/TLSDonate. Now, if you missed any of today's episodes, subscribe on YouTube to catch clips and replays. And don't forget to subscribe to the audio version of this podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. I had a fun time. I hope you did too. Sending a special thank you out to Daryl Michael Scott for joining us, Professor.
Professor.
Our next live show is Wednesday, March, is that 3rd? Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll have author Frank Zaquan Jordan, who has written a number of books on the plight of African Americans and other minorities in America, including his recent book, Oh Say Can You See? The Unmentioned History of Terrorism on Blacks in America. So it should be an interesting conversation. And our winner for today's show is Olivia E., who may have already gotten her final thought in there, but let's see what she has to say. Olivia E., what's your final thought for today?
Oh, my final thought is everything's inside of you. Your strength, your perseverance, keep going. Everything's inside of us. We don't need anything. We just need what's in our mind and what's in our heart. And we can achieve everything. So go ahead. You're strong. You're powerful.
All right. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, Rob B. Wonderful show today. And we will see you Wednesday. Shenanigans.